podcast with Maryland Focus and Howard County Roots. I'm so glad to have back with me here today my co-host Candace Dodson-Reed after a brief break, but we were very thankful to have Annie Hadershaw stepping in for you. Welcome back, Candace.
I'm happy to be back. Thank you to Annie Hadershaw for filling in. And, you know, who knows, sometimes I might need a break again. And she has been a great co-host to you. And so I'm grateful for that. But I'm really happy to be back, and I'm happy to welcome Tonya to the show again.
Yes, yes, I'm very excited. It's a great guest for your return.
Yes.
The Howard County Library President and CEO. This is our second time on the show, as you noted. So we already know it's going to be great, and we have some great content to talk about. You know, Choose Civility, moving on from Choose Civility, talking about brave choices, brave voices. I think it's really exciting. A lot of people are curious about what that's about. And before we go into that, while we don't have a new business from the Third this week, we did want to congratulate Laura Bacon and the Third for signing their lease for their space, which my understanding they're having a soft open tomorrow.
Yes.
So that is very exciting for Laura. We look forward to continuing our partnership with them. Hope to get some new businesses that we can promote soon. But I know that now that she has her space, that's probably going to be going to a next level. So good for you, Laura. Great job and good luck opening. So with that, Candace, why don't you formally introduce our guest?
I will. I will definitely do that. Tonya Akins was hired as the president and CEO of the Howard County Library System in 2018. Since that time, she has overseen the continued renovation and expansion of the library system and modification of certain policies. Most notably, in 2020, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, the library system announced that it would no longer be charging late fees for borrowed items, which continues to the present. Last month, the library system announced that it would be evolving the iconic Choose Civility campaign into a new mission and name, Brave Voices, Brave Choices, which I personally love. The library provided the following announcement on its website. We are acting on our commitment to move past statements and begin the work of creating the reality that we want for all people. Our work is happening internally through leadership development, staff training, and real racial equity at the library conversations. For our community, we are providing opportunities for racial equity, training, and conversation along with speakers, classes, and events. I can't wait to talk about all of that. I've participated in some of that. And I'm excited to have Tonya on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so very much, Tom and Candace. I am excited to be back with you. Time flies, and then at the same time, it feels like it's been so long. So glad to see you both.
Exactly. So first, we have to start here. The Choose Civility campaign has an end date, 2021. How did you come up with the decision to move on from this iconic piece of Howard County's identity, and how has it been received?
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, part of what, you know, you do in any organization is review the effectiveness and the impact of things and really how it's resonating today. When we are looking at equity, racial equity, and how it is, how we're implementing racial equity within our organization, and then the message we're sending outside as a leader in community education in Howard County, we really had to do some real assessment of Choose Civility and determine if that was really the right message, especially in this moment. Is it really enough to ask people to be civil? And then how will we defining what civility is, right? And who gets to define what is civil and what is not civil action? And is it enough to just be civil? And does that really equate to equity and racial equity? Does that equate to empathy and understanding? Does that equate to building relationship and better community? And we decided that it did not, that we really needed to be brave and bold and really stand on what we wanted to transpire in our community, which is that we really are building better relationships with one another. And that takes some commitment of people. It takes each of us moving out of our comfort zone beyond our regular networks to really understand other people, other races, other cultures, other ideas and perspectives, and to reckon with our history and to say that, no, we don't have it perfect here in Howard County. We're a beautiful community, of beautiful people, I think all wanting the best, but we don't have it perfect, and it's definitely not a paradise for everybody, but it can be.
I appreciate Can I ask a quick follow-up question? Now, I like the idea that you use the word brave as opposed to safe. Like sometimes when we have these conversations, we say, these are safe spaces for us to have these conversations. And, you know, safe implies to me that, you know, we don't push people beyond their comfort zone, right? Like it's not comfortable to have conversations about racial equity and justice. And so I really love the idea that you use the word brave as opposed to safe.
Thank you for that. And we wanted to also, you know, realize that all of us have been impacted by racism. It's one of the things that we lift up a lot during the trainings and in the sense-making circles, which we'll talk more about, I'm sure, but through this initiative, because it will show up in our conversation for all of us, right? The ways in which we've been impacted. So, you know, to say, you know, it's so true that these are not comfortable conversations. There is pain. There is deep-rooted pain. You know, I you know, share with folks that I had a hard time just writing our statement, right, against racism after the George Floyd murder. It's painful. It is an exercise in pain. And so whenever traumas are lifted up, right, when people begin to share their stories, and sometimes they're not even sharing it, they're just triggered, right, in the space, right, and have not gotten up to sharing it yet. But that trauma comes out in other conversation that they have, right? And in their reactions. And so it does take a brave voice and a brave choice to step in.
Well, speaking of brave, I mean, choose civility. That's how you know if someone on the highway next to you is from Howard County. I mean, they've got yes. one of those magnets on their car. So you've described a lot of we and sort of, I want to know more a little bit of how did this originate? And then also, Tonya, you got to be honest with this. I know there was someone in the library system, someone on your board, someone, and I obviously don't want names, but what type of resistance did you hit? Because there is this sort of, this is what we've always done. This is our identity. How can you take that away from us? Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, absolutely. And so I would say, you know, initially, right after when we were preparing to release a statement, there were all of these conversations for me, right, started by me, both within our internal team and with our board of trustees. And I was at the point where I really refused to write a statement if it wasn't going to be more than a statement. And this was happening alongside us having those real conversations that Candace shared with you, the racial equity at the library conversations that happened internally, which was really something that I'd started with our staff team to give us a space to just process through this, right? And these are conversations that staff can elect to come. Nobody has to come. They are invited to come. And I provide something to read, something to watch, something to begin spurring our conversation to get us to build down or kind of break down the walls that have been built up over time. We've been some of these folks working together for decades, right? And have never had a real conversation with one another about what happens in the space. And some of those things within our library, some of the stories that we've collected have happened internally, amongst staff and with customers at the library. And so there was absolutely, you know, I think some groundwork there of us having these conversations and doing some of this work. We were on a path pre-COVID, pre-George Floyd's murder, around asset-based community development and what equity could look like in this community. So some of that was rooted, which is important because we had started some of that work. But when I said, I really want to provide the training internally for our staff alongside, because that's the other thing, our staff are in the same trainings with the community, which was also a conversation. What about our dirty laundry getting out there, right? You know, those types of things. And I said, you know what, we're going to say that we're learning alongside everybody else. There were the questions of whether the library should be the entity in the county leading this type of effort and whether we should even be in the space of publicly talking about racial equity. My thing is that we are the community's place for public education, and this is absolutely an issue of education, both of the history of racism in the United States and locally, how we heal from racism and its impacts, the ways that we see it in our county organizations and our institutions, and then giving our community the opportunity, again, for self-directed education, which is among the things that libraries do so well, right? So I just could not think of a better entity to do this. We are the entity that also brings people together around a myriad of, you know, things in a myriad of ways. It's the only organization where you're really going to, without intention, be able to connect with somebody outside of your network and outside of your interests, right? Even if you are in a community center and at an art show, you're there with other people that like that thing, right? That are there for that purpose, right? And so we're able to kind of just bring in all kinds of cross sections of community into a space to do this. So there was a lot of conversation, both with the staff team, with the board. I've had staff who absolutely still don't think that they may think this is a political thing. It is not a political thing. There's absolutely nothing political about racism. It is racism, right? Yeah. It is rooted within the United States, and you can't get away from it because it is so baked in, right, that we have to have the conversations about where we are. The stories are an educational piece because it's introducing community to community. I think Howard County has so much quantitative data around racial disparities, inequalities, injustice, and some of those things, to pair that alongside the qualitative so that there's actually a voice behind those stories that people can, these are our neighbors, right? These are our kids. A lot of these stories are from K-12 students in the county that are being hurt every single day in so many ways. And there are simple things that we can do. They really are. Right. When you look at them, these are not things that we have to move mountains. We have to change hearts. Right. We have to make people understand what is actually happening, reckon with that, and make some commitment and decision to act on it.
And if I could ask a follow up, because I ask the controversial questions and I want to make sure Candace can get more into the substance here. But sure. Choose civility. You sort of touched on this in your opening remarks, but there are many, including those on this podcast, that feel that choose civility had ended up being almost an armor for the status quo, that it had been something that instead of actually creating a community that could learn to work with one another and talk to one another, it ended up being sort of a standard that you could use to dampen down dissent, to sort of put things in the closet and keep them in the closet. Is this not only an affirmative step towards taking on the tough issues, but also a somewhat of a rejection of the standards of choose civility?
It is. It is. And I can say that it wasn't something that immediately resonated with me. Right. And I was the outsider coming in, right, evaluating various aspects of the organization and the various initiatives that we have here. And my first reaction was, whose civility? Right. Because it is so rooted, and we all come to this with different lens. And I think once we started kind of having those conversations, I think people would be surprised how many people in the community said, thank you so much for doing that. Right. Well, I'm sure that there are some who may say, what is she doing? she's come from California and she's uprooting, you know, this beloved initiative. But I think we can do better. I really know that we can. And it just cannot be this mask of, I've chosen civility and I'm done. Because obviously, right, because the stories are still there. The incidents are still happening here locally. So we haven't. That has not made the difference that this community needs to see, right, for all people. And there's no arguing about that, right? Yeah. That is evident. And so that's what we are, you know, just extending the invitation and really hoping that the community will step in. So many people have. We've trained over 200 people already. We've collected over 300 stories and are feeding them back to the community so that they can begin to understand what types of incidents are happening here in Howard County. And I should say that there are stories of hope also, right? That people say, these are ways that we can work together. Here's the proof, right? Here's what I experienced. Here are the things we need to amplify and make sure that are spreading across the community, these types of things. And you know, the storyteller, the person who submits their narrative, is given the opportunity to say who they think this story should be shared with, right? Is it leaders at the library? Is it leaders in county government? Is it the school system or medical professionals, whatever that is? And we are going to make sure that we do that, right? That we get those stories to those folks so they understand what the community experience is that they may not be aware of, right? And at least they can never say they didn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why I was excited to come back for this show is because I am participating in the training that you're doing. And, you know, I'm really struck by, I like the way that you're, you know, that you're using stories to talk about these difficult topics. And one of the things that I said in the conversation that I had at our last, you know, sense making circle, and I don't think I'm revealing anything because it was what I said, is sort of, I hope people can hear the experience that some folks are having in our county and really listen to what's happening, right, from our perspective, and not say, this doesn't happen here. We don't have racism. We don't have issues in Howard County, but really through storytelling, understand what we're going through, right? And right. So I have two questions. One is sort of how did you, like, why storytelling? And you've talked about that a little bit. And the second, and you've touched on this as well, but if you could elaborate, like, how do we get more people to hear these stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So why storytelling? Because that's what the ancestors do. Like, there's no better way to kind of, you know, make sure that we are bringing to bear, I think, the experiences through someone's own voice. I think that is just the most powerful way to receive a message, right, about what is happening, no matter what that is the firsthand account, right? And so that's why the storytelling. I think that it is such a natural way for us to share and receive information, but then there's no middleman there. So the library's not, right, listening to somebody and transcribing or telling a version of, you're getting this directly from community members here. And I think there is this power of collective learning where we are able to really have these stories be part of the narrative of the county, not just now to this one person whose story it was, right? Some training circles are on their second or third sense making. Some have just completed their first. I don't think there is not one participant who can't say they are not already changed, which is just remarkable. I mean, the feedback from folks after the training, no matter if they have been doing this work for decades or this, they're very new to the journey, people are stepping in and saying, the training, I learned something new. I've learned a new way to kind of process this and begin working on it. And I've learned more about my community and others. I think the way that we get people to hear these stories is exactly what we're doing. We are going to share them out with leaders. We are posting them to the website. It's refreshed almost every day with new content. And we're trying to put all 300 stories up so people just aren't overwhelmed, because we really do want you to move through them and really give them some thought and process. But then also the folks that read them are amplifying them, right? So we are inviting folks that are in these sense-making circles and that have gone through the training to talk with their networks, to share what is happening, what they're experiencing in the circle, to share that this initiative is happening, and encourage others to submit their stories of hope or challenge, and to make people aware of that. We have so many successive steps to come in this process, one of which is when we're back in person, and hopefully very soon, creating space for community conversations around this and other things that are happening connected to racial equity in the county. You know, we've long done the event, The Longest Table, here at the library, and there are always people clamoring for what is next. How do we stay connected? And this is one of those ways, is to continue those conversations. We're having so many conversations around Undesign the Red Line, the redlining exhibit that we hosted pre-COVID, and how we bring that back and allow for community members to put in their ideas of how to solve the issue. So that's the other piece of this that will keep people connected, is that sense-making piece that we spoke of, right? When they're reading the stories, they're looking for actionable insights, whether you're in one of the sense-making circles or not. What can we do in response to what I've just heard, right? How can I bring my power, my privilege, my platform, whatever, to bear to help this situation not be repeated in our county, or to help make sure this one is, right? And I think that is how we begin to really grow on this. You know, Howard County is known for being the first in so many things, and I really hope that this community will take up the challenge to be the first in this area, to be the first to really, really tackle this well, to be the first to embrace learning from one another, and really be the model in this area.
Well, speaking about taking up the challenge, I want to take a step back and do sort of a 10,000 foot level, because both you and Candace obviously are very, you've gone many further steps into this program and understand it much better than maybe our average listener. So I want to start with just, where did the name come from? And then also, how is this structured? What is this model based off of? And what can people expect from this program over the fulfillment of its execution?
Yeah. Thank you for that. So first, we started the initiative really just out of the vision of how do we build better community, right? So the pieces came together, and there are three main prongs to it, right? The first being this initiative provides free racial equity training for people in the community and staff. Participants, again, span the spectrum of folks who have long been in this work to folks who are really new. The training really provides a baseline for our community to begin this work collectively, because we'd heard that, right? Some people say, well, I've been doing racial equity for a while. I don't know if I need the quote unquote training. And we said, you do, because you need to be in community with other people, and you'll see the difference here, and it will help us get a baseline as a community. So we're working with renowned trainers from the Racial Equity Institute and the Soul Focus Group. REI, the Racial Equity Institute, really provides the history of racism in the United States. And informs us how we all, regardless of race, have really been negatively impacted. And Soul Focus Group provides the healing from racism piece, right? That we all have been affected, and that we're not going to look for whose fault it is. We're going to look on how we heal, right? How do we move forward? And the second piece of the initiative is the story collection. We're working with Equity Matters out of Baltimore and have created a process for folks to share their narratives via our website or via one of our public story collection events about their experiences with racism in the county or with racial equity in the county. We're sharing those back, of course, with the community. And that third prong then is the sense-making process by which people give meaning to their collective experiences, right? Community members are invited to join one of the circles and to really find actionable insights or small steps they can begin taking. And so the Brave Voices, Brave Choices, we looked at a few different things and trying to decide what to call this. And it really was trying to express the moment. And even the logo that we have that goes along with it is almost like a hashtag of sorts, right? The thread of many making for a stronger statement if we're standing together, right? But also that it's not a square, right? It's not all the way filled in. There's some holes there, right? So an invitation for people also to step in and help fill in the gaps. And we decided again on Brave Voices, Brave Choices, because we know that it takes strength It takes real intention to step in, whether you're coming from trauma, you're coming from just the unknown of what you're going to get in sharing or hearing the stories. And it is a choice. And we want people to step in and be brave and make that choice, both for themselves and for others in the community. So we're really hoping that people are fully educated throughout this process, that they come away knowing something about themselves and how they've been impacted by racism, as well as their community, the impacts that are out there, and hopefully make some decisions on how they can help build better community in Howard County and really get Howard County to being anti-racist. You can't be anti-anything until you reckon with what is actually here, right? And you can't reckon with it until you know what it is, right? So we're trying to tell people, here's what it is, right? Acknowledge that it's here because your fellow community members are telling you so, right? And then decide what you're going to do about it. Make some commitments to help heal.
So we have to ask about the no fine policy. So why was this decision made and how has it played out? Are you still getting books back? And was this like a national thing or what? Talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So there have been several libraries, probably over the past decade in earnest, where it's really been a movement across public libraries to go, quote unquote, fine free, right? And it really is an equity issue. It absolutely is. Howard County Library System has long waived fines for folks. And again, in coming in and just kind of, reviewing and assessing all aspects of the organization, when we look at that, first, you have to want to be someone and put yourself in the space to ask for the fine to be waived. You have to know that the fine can be waived, right? And so literally, we were seeing probably amongst people who didn't need the fine to be waived financially, right, were the most to ask for it because they were aware that it was something that was available to them, right? And we know that happens across all myriad of, right, professions. And that same thing, when you're healthcare space, if you know to ask for it, there are things you can get. But when you don't know, you don't get it because you don't know it's available to you. So we were seeing that happen. The other thing is fines have never really been something, and we've proven that. There's lots of data out there from the American Library Association, even here locally. It's not a prompter to return the book. It actually sometimes keeps people from returning the book because they don't have the money to pay the fine or they're embarrassed or whatever happens there, right? And so there was that. And for all of the staff work that it takes to really get behind people and send out notices and do all of these things, it just was not worth it financially. But moreover, it's not good customer service. That's not the relationship that we want to be in with community members. And we certainly don't want to put barriers in place for people in accessing the library. So you've got this overdue book and now the fine is scaled up. And maybe you're a student and your parent can't pay the fine and now you don't have access when you need it for resources for school. It just was not a good practice. And so I wanted to make sure that we were not putting barriers in place for people, that we were actually an organization that looked for solutions for people to be able to access resources that really belong to them. Because that's the other thing, right, about me. I really believe in us being people-focused. The library is an organization that belongs to the community. It's funded with public funds. So we don't need fines on top on top of that. You know, we just don't. So that's really where that came from. And there has been some impact. There have also been people who say, you know what, I love the library so much, I can make a donation instead, and they do, right? So there are all kinds of ways to support the library still, if you'd like to. And folks certainly do that. But we don't want to have barriers in place, for people. That's just not a way to have.
So a really quick funny related to that. So I had a little bit of PTSD as I asked that question. Because, when my daughter was younger, I can remember I dropped off one time, not dropped off, I had a run in to return some books. And she came back to the car and she's like, oh, we owe some money. And I'm like, okay, like a quarter, like how much money? She's like, $90. I need dollars. And I was like, okay, wow. So we were that family. We did pay our fines, of course, but your point about, you know, and that same year I went to the Stacks event, right? Like, so I was like, I'm like, Milan, I'd rather give the money to the Stacks event and pay fines on books. Like, come on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's not the experience we want people to have with learning, right? And right. with education, with educational entities at all. So that was the impetus for that, really wanting to make sure that we are giving equitable access to all resources in the library. You know, we recently reviewed our printing policy as well. When people come to the library, they're not likely to come and use the library's printer unless they need the library's printer, right? Especially, you know, in 2021. And for us to have the cost there really says a lot, right? We're not going to charge for the books. We're not going to charge for the DVDs. We're not going to charge for you to come see this New York Times bestselling author, but we're going to charge you for printing. Right. And likely the people that really need that service. Right. It's a basic core service. And so it's just been for us reviewing those kinds of practices and making sure that we're not placing the burden on folks unduly and inequitably and creating barriers for people. So.
And just curious, across the country, do you know approximately what percentage of libraries have adopted this no fine policy? Because it sounds fantastic. It sounds progressive and inclusive and all the things that we love to see. So is this something a lot of libraries are doing?
I'm not sure. That's a great question, Tom. I'm not sure what percentage. I can tell you that the Urban Libraries Council does maintain a map of fine-free libraries across the nation. And there are several others. ALA has some information as well, but the percentage I'm not quite sure of, but I can tell you that a healthier portion of the nation's leading libraries and Howard County is certainly one of them, have moved in this direction.
Great. Yeah. And then I guess before we go into our fun questions, what should we expect from the library? What else do you have going on? What can people get excited about? And how can they support you?
Thank you so much for that. Well, I'd like to share just three upcoming opportunities for story collections. So if there are folks, and we've heard from many people that weren't able to get into one of the five training groups that we had this year and are waiting for the next training groups to come, and we'll be announcing those soon. We do have three upcoming story collection events. Whether you were part of the training group or not, you can come and learn more about the initiative and share your stories or hear stories from others that will be in those sessions. There's one on Saturday, May 8th from 1 to 2:30, one on Wednesday, May 19th, again from 1 to 2:30, and then Thursday, June 3rd from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And we also have an upcoming event with Dr. Erica Lee, author of The Making of Asian America, on May 26th at 7 p.m. And you can get to any of these from our website and register. It's hclibrary.org. So yes, we encourage people to engage with us in that way. There are so many wonderful things happening at the library. We will have also, this is part of the Equity Initiative, we'll launch later this summer a mobile unit that will serve our early learners, the 0 to 5 set and their families, taking this early learning education to them where they are, to your community, popping up in your park or in your apartment complex or whatever that is, again, so that we are making sure that everybody has access to the library's resources, whether you have the transportation or the time to get over there or not, the van's going to come to you. It's beautiful. So that's something that we are doing. You don't have to be a totally rural community where there are no libraries to have a mobile unit, because there are still people that may experience challenges in getting there. So that is something that will be rolling out late summer, early fall. There's that happening. Our friends and foundation of Howard County are amazing. They support our initiatives, and we always encourage people to connect with them if you would like to donate to any of the initiatives that we have. And we will be, you know, of course, excited to welcome people back into the branches fully when we can. And we sure are hoping that that is soon.
Great. That's fantastic. All right. So some fun questions. You've been on the show before, so you know this. And we're expecting the book to be like something amazing. But what was the last book, movie, and music recommendation you made to a friend or family member? You, of course, know you have to hit all three.
So the last book was Cast, because I just can't recommend it enough. Isabel Wilkerson's Cast. So definitely. And I tell people that it's not a book to be read, it's a book to be studied. So get it and keep studying it. So definitely that. Music was the Versus Battle with Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I've like already watched it like three times. I'm calling everybody and everybody's calling me. I can watch it. We're going to have a big screen to just do it all over again. So if you haven't seen that, find the Versus Battle and have a wonderful night, because I was up all night.
That's a great recommendation. There were times during that, I have to say, where like I screamed out loud in my house, like, oh,
I did too. I was there with you. It's awesome. And it's awesome every time I relive it. So do that if you need some good feels in your day. And then for the movie, I'm not the biggest movie person. Let me see. That's a good question. Oh, I know what it was. It was Regina King's movie. It's going to come to me.
I'm not going to be able to help with this one, I don't think.
You know, because it's got...
Oh my gosh, wait a minute.
Now I've got to look it up.
There are people listening to this podcast that are yelling the name of the movie.
Not watch it. Really fast here.
How can we not remember the name of that movie?
I know. One Night in Miami.
One Night in Miami.
Oh, yeah. See, and I knew that movie. I'd seen it. It was wonderful.
Yes.
So I don't remember what your answer was to this question last time. I presume we had this question. I think we had this question from the start. What is the most unpopular, benign opinion you hold?
Probably among my siblings that I'm everybody's favorite. I tell them that all the time.
I mean, I guess that would be unpopular in some circles, although I don't know if it's that benign in that same circle. But we can accept that. A family dynamic opinion is a first.
There you go.
That's awesome. So what podcasts are you listening to? And I have to give a shout out to the Young Folks podcast at the library, because I was on that one and that was amazing.
Isn't that awesome? They have just owned that and... amazing ways. So if you're not connected, again, you can connect with both of our podcasts for teens and the Hijinks podcast via our website. So definitely those listening to Michelle Obama's podcast and loving it. Yeah.
All right. And now that you've been here for a bit, I'm comfortable asking you this question. What is the best meal in Howard County?
Oh, the best meal. Okay, I might get in trouble. then I'll say it and then go somewhere else and they'll be like, you didn't pick us. So I could eat at Aida Bistro every night.
Ah, there you go. They're good people too.
They are good people. Yeah.
Very nice. And so the question that we end all of our podcasts with that you know is, what do you think we all need to do to elevate Maryland?
Oh, I think recast, commit to better relationship building and better understanding of your neighbors.
Wonderful.
Yeah, well, imagine if we all did that.
Do wonders. It's transformative.
Yeah. I am very excited about signing up for the next group of trainings, because I had a infinite home and three kids missed the sign up for the first go round, but I can promise you when the new sessions are signed up, so long as I get approval from my partner in parenting over here, that yes. I will sign up for that. But it's very exciting what you're doing. And I think that Choose Civility served its purpose and time, and I look forward to, and I hope you are going to have Brave Voices magnet bumper stickers, because I will put that on my car.
Yes, I will definitely put that. I'm not a bumper sticker person anyway, but I will put that one on my car for sure. And so thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the work that you're doing at the library. I'm a huge fan and appreciate how you're leaning into this work and really embracing our community in a way that it needs to be embraced. So, and I have to give a quick thank you to Tom as well for supporting me as I took my little hiatus. And thank you for doing that. So I appreciate that.
We love to have you back. And this was a great show. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Excellent.